the very moment that she represents the majority. So this is not just a crisis of international legal institutions, but also a crisis of democratic or so-called democratic institutions in the countries in which we live.
And how does the tens of thousands of Palestinians being forced south right now, we just have 20 seconds, fit into your charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity?
What we're seeing is an ongoing Nakba of the Palestinians who are with their hands up and on their feet with white handkerchiefs in order not to be killed. This is an ethnic cleansing of the north of Gaza. It's a continuation of the Nakba to take the Palestinian land without Palestinian people. It is a crime against humanity and fits in a larger framework of genocidal warfare.
Palestinian human rights attorney Noor Arakat, associate professor at Rutgers University, we thank you so much. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution in support of the critical work of community radio. Thank you.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland will not start enforcing its camping ban next week.
Portland Teachers Union attracts new supporters.
And PGE plans its biggest rate hike in two decades.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 10th, 2023. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland will not start enforcing its camping ban on Monday, November 13th, as originally planned. A Multnomah County Circuit Court judge approved a request for a temporary injunction against the law on Thursday. That means Portland cannot enforce its camping ban until the lawsuit against it plays out. The class action lawsuit was filed by Oregon Law Center on behalf of five homeless Portlanders. They claim the ordinance that the city council passed in June is objectively unreasonable. It bans camping between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. every day and severely restricts where people can camp, among many other restrictions. They also say the rule violates Oregon law and the Oregon State Constitution. Their case asserts that the camping ban violates a state law that says all local laws governing homeless residents' survival activities, such as sleeping, sitting, or staying warm and dry, must be objectively reasonable. That law says local ordinances must also take the availability of alternatives like shelters into account. Portland only has about 30% of the beds it needs to shelter the entire local homeless population.
The Portland Teachers Union gathered new supporters for their strike this week. A letter with more than 1,600 PPS parent signatures was sent to the district, calling on them to center their decisions on what is best for our students and inform their decision by listening to the teachers. Teachers have been working under an expired contract since June, and they were negotiating with the school district for months before that. Some of their main contract concerns include wages, class sizes, prep time, and mental health support for students. At Benson High School, hundreds of construction workers walked off their job, slowing the remodel of Benson High. They say they won't cross a picket line. One electrician told the Portland Mercury, quote, "The hope for every worker on the job site is that walking off will put pressure on the district and that PPS is listening to us honoring the teachers' picket, end quote. Bargaining between the parties will continue over the long weekend, with Monday being the earliest day students could be back at school.
On Wednesday, dozens of Portland Jews and allies from Jewish Voice for Peace blocked the entrance to Representative Earl Blumenauer's office for most of the day to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. KBOO's Isabel Charlet has more on that story.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for holding this energy in this moment as we are demanding that our elected officials pay attention, don't look away, and call for a ceasefire now. Ceasefire now!
Ceasefire now!
This is what needs to continue to happen. We cannot let our government go on business as usual as a genocide is taking place.
That's right! We are here as Jews because our collective experiences of oppression have been cynically weaponized to justify the oppression of others.
Right.
We are here as U.S. residents because our tax dollars are used without our consent to fund the continued genocide of Palestinians and theft of Palestinian land.
Activists focused on pressuring Blumenauer because he has expressed concern for the safety of Gazans. In a recent statement, he said that cutting off water, electricity, medicine, fuel, and humanitarian aid has already created horrific conditions. Blumenauer has worked for years to solve the water and sanitation crisis in Gaza and says he knows full well the consequences they face. Yet, he has stopped short of calling for a ceasefire.
He knows that the U.S. is not simply complicit. The U.S. is committing this genocide. The U.S. funds it. The U.S. arms it. And President Biden could get on the phone right now to Netanyahu and say, stop it, and it would stop. Blumenauer, you know what the right thing to do is, so do it. Ceasefire now.
Ceasefire now!
Nearly 300 Oregon health providers have signed an open letter to Oregon's congressional delegation calling for their support of an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, which the UN has designated a health catastrophe.
16 hospitals shut down out of 35. They're actually performing surgery without anesthesia. They're using vinegar as a disinfectant. They have no fuel. They're running out of fuel for the generators. It's absolute catastrophe. And of course, all you have to do is look at your TV, right? You look at your TV and you see what's going on. You see the bombing, you see the destruction, pulling bodies out of rubble. No way was any of those ever a military target. They're deliberate collective punishment. It's a war crime. And none of our Oregon congressional reps said one damn thing about it. Not one damn thing. It's an outrage.
We really want to stress to Blumenauer that this is your legacy. You have had a reputable time in office. You have an ability to lead the tide for Oregon legislators and an ability to end your legacy, not with complicity and genocide. Our grief as Jews is watching genocide happen in the name of our ancestors, happening in our name, and we're here to say not in our name, and that never again means never again for anyone, and never again means right now.
To use, like, actions like this can be a healing step towards integration of trauma. Like, I think that's really true. And I think we're, like, witnessing that in an immense uprising from Jewish communities, right, right now, speaking out against the violence against Gaza. Like, that can be a way for nervous systems to integrate, actually, to, like, speak up and be a part of community-based movements like this, you know.
It is incumbent on us to take action and to also bear witness and to grapple with our complicity and the ways that we have failed as Americans specifically, but also around the world.
And I dreamt we were all beautiful and strong.
There are Palestinians and Gazans risking their lives to show us what's happening on the ground. We owe them to not look away. We owe them to pay attention, and we owe them to take action.
That was Zia Lavaf, Rod Such, Amina Rahman, and Liz Shallert. And for KBOO News, I'm Isabel Charlet.
We're right here, we're right.
children rise.
Reports of anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, and anti-Semitic abuse are on the rise on college campuses since the Israel-Hamas war began last month. At Cornell University, a student has been accused of posting online threats against Jewish students. A University of Massachusetts student was arrested after allegedly punching a Jewish student. At Stanford, an Arab-Muslim student was hit by a car in a possible hate attack. Within the collegiate student Jewish community, there is a range of perspectives on the Israel-Hamas war. Students supporting both sides say they have been subjected to taunts and rhetoric. Hateful messages have been visible at campus rallies, on anonymous message boards, and on graffiti written on dorms and other buildings. The unease is particularly strong at Tulane, where 43% of students are Jewish, the highest percentage among colleges that are not explicitly Jewish. Colleges have been trying to make Jewish, Arab, and Muslim students feel safe, while being careful to separate out what is protected as political speech versus threatening language representing hate speech.
The American Postal Workers Union is the latest to release a statement demanding a ceasefire in the violence in Gaza. It appears the labor union will get at least part of what it's asking for, with the announcement of a four-hour humanitarian break in the bombing. Those will start today. Farah Siddiqui reports.
One of the nation's largest labor unions has become the latest organization to demand a ceasefire in Gaza as Israel's war with Hamas plays out. The American Postal Workers Union announced on Wednesday that its members are shocked and saddened by the tragic and ongoing violence in Israel and Palestine. The statement condemns the Hamas violence of October 7th, but also says Israel's response has made the prospects for peace more remote. APWU Detroit local president Keith Combs points out that an estimated 4,000 children are among more than 10,000 deaths in the conflict so far.
Israel has shut out the flow of food, water, fuel and medical supplies to Gaza Strip, a war crime. A humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding every day in Gaza. Thousands more innocent civilians stand to die, woefully preventable death.
The White House announced Thursday that Israel has agreed to a daily four-hour humanitarian pause from bombing Gaza to allow civilians to flee. But there's no word on whether those who leave will be allowed back in at a later date. The push for a longer pause comes as part of President Joe Biden's renewed diplomatic push to free hostages taken by Hamas. Combs says the union's position is that anything less than an immediate ceasefire, release of hostages, and massive humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza will not be enough.
We call on our government, which is the primary foreign benefactor of the Israel government, to use all its power to protect innocent lives and to help bring about peace in the region, and not use our tax dollars for more war.
Other unions have also made statements regarding the violence in Gaza, including Starbucks Workers United, which posted a message of solidarity with Palestine on X, formerly Twitter, on October 9th. Starbucks executives sued the union in federal court to stop using the company's name and logo as trademark infringement. The union has filed its own countersuit. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
U.S. Representative Cori Bush says four-hour humanitarian pauses in Gaza are insufficient. West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin will not seek re-election. And Senate Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries supports a continuing resolution to avoid a government shutdown. With those stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Well, we get a break for 4 hours, but as soon as that 4 hours is over, then what? How dare we treat humans in that way?
Progressive Missouri Congresswoman Cori Bush says the four-hour humanitarian pauses Israel has agreed to in Gaza aren't enough. She says anything less than a ceasefire is inhumane. In a rare show of unity during a debate that did get ugly Wednesday night, the Republican presidential candidates all supported Israel's military actions. Nikki Haley is a former UN ambassador.
Last thing we need to do is to tell Israel what to do. The only thing we should be doing is supporting them and eliminating Hamas.
At one point, Haley called businessman Vivek Ramaswamy scum for bringing up her daughter. Far away, frontrunner former President Donald Trump did not debate, but held a rally nearby. With just days for Congress to find a way to keep the government open, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats will not pay a ransom to Republican demands. He says the way forward is a bipartisan agreement.
And if Republicans are unable to do that over the next few days, then the only approach is to pass a continuing resolution at the fiscal year 2023. 2023 levels.
On Thursday, conservative West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin said he won't seek re-election. And another worry for Democrats is that Manchin hasn't ruled out a third-party run for president.
What I will be doing is traveling the country and speaking out to see if there is an interest in creating a movement to mobilize the middle and bring Americans together.
The Senate map looks increasingly tough for Democrats, with incumbent senators John Tester in Montana and Sherrod Brown in Ohio both on the ballot. But Democrats just had a very good election, often defending abortion rights. Former Republican Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum is reacting to successful Ohio referendums on abortion and marijuana by criticizing direct democracy.
Thank goodness that most of the states in this country don't allow you to put everything on the ballot, because pure democracies are not the way to run a country.
Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville is still defending his block on hundreds of military promotions. He says he opposes the Pentagon's policy of paying for staff's travel to get an abortion.
Let me remind everybody, Congress never voted for this. We also never appropriated money for this. There is no law that allows this administration to do this.
Saturday is Veterans Day. On Sunday, a salute to service halftime show at the Cowboys-Giants game will honor 16 recipients of the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest award for battlefield valor. Army Lieutenant Colonel William Swenson won the medal, helping save more than a dozen lives during a six-hour firefight after an ambush in Afghanistan.
I'll be out there on the field on that day. What we'll be representing, though, is the character of all Americans and the heroism that all Americans have access to through their everyday lives.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, an in-depth look behind the headlines by fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sona Lee. Then at 7, it's Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather, mostly cloudy with rain showers after midnight and a low of 50. Tomorrow will also be cloudy with rain early in the day and a high of 57. Today in history, in 1775, the United States Marine Corps was founded. In 1983, Bill Gates introduced Windows 1.0. The quote of the day is indirectly from athlete and actor Chuck Connors, who died this day in 1975. His TV character, Lucas McCain, who some of you may remember as the Rifleman, said, "The older you get, the more questions don't have answers."
A U.S. Department of Agriculture-funded native farm is thriving. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nations Farm in Connecticut is thriving since its establishment 8 years ago. Back then, the land was a largely unused wooded area near the reservation. Edwin J. Vieira has an update.
Mishinook Farm is home to livestock and several greenhouses growing a bevy of crops. Tribe Agricultural Director Jeremy Whipple spearheaded the project, and this year, the University of Connecticut Extension helped establish a youth engagement group for agricultural training. Whipple says the training's focus is to strengthen the tribal community and establish self-sufficiency.
Trying to get the membership and everybody on the same page on growing and, you know, bringing back our traditional roots for gardening and our culture.
One aim is to teach the importance of good nutrition to members of the tribe dealing with health issues. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has funded the project for an additional 4 years due to its success. Whipple says he hopes to expand the farm and will apply for grants to add a meat processing facility and an event space for classes. For now, though, Whipple and his cohort of farmers are looking to add more greenhouses. While some of the food grown at Mishinook Farm is sold, most of it goes to a tribal food assistance program.
Right now, we have 180 members that are signed up for the program, and the grant reimburses the farm $70 a box that we give out. So that's how, you know, the USDA actually compensates us for feeding the community healthy food.
Members of the tribe receive a box of vegetables every 2 weeks during the growing season. This is Edwin J. Vieira. This story was produced with original reporting from Janice Roman for WSHU.
The movie adaptation of David Grand's book, Killers of the Flower Moon, premiered a few weeks ago. It examines the reign of terror, the mass murder of the Osage Nation in Oklahoma during the 1920s for oil money. KUNC's Emma Van Denende reports on what some Osage people have to say about the film.
Many Osage people were impressed with how director Martin Scorsese reflected Osage culture in the movie. Not only did he choose to film in Oklahoma, but he met with tribal members to ensure cultural accuracy, from the clothing to the language. Some Osage people, like Colorado resident Tink Tinker, would have liked Scorsese to portray the movie from an indigenous perspective.
Unfortunately, he's a white man who's working with white money and selling a movie to a largely non-native audience, so he couldn't take the risk of putting the Osages in the center of the stage.
It's not the only criticism the movie has received. Some think the nearly 3.5-hour movie is too long. But Tinker and other Osage people are happy the story is finally being shared, as many Americans are unaware. J. Kilby Reed, another Colorado Osage member, says he'd often tell his family's history to friends and be met with skepticism.
I've had so many people that have texted me and being like, this Leonardo DiCaprio movie, is this the story you were telling me years ago? And I'm like, yes.
This movie is part of a recent rise in indigenous stories and creators in the spotlight. But Jeffrey Standing Bear, the principal chief of the Osage tribe, says action is key to keep lingering racism at bay.
If you don't say nothing, if you just sit back there and watch it, you're complicit in murder. You're complicit in what's going on. You got to understand this is a true story, and it can happen again.
Standing Bear, along with other Osage people, hope this movie will serve as a catalyst for others to learn more about their history. For National Native News, I'm Emma Vandenhainde.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, vice chair of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, is holding a field hearing in Bethel, Alaska, Friday on the impact of salmon declines on Alaska Native communities. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
If you're a customer of Portland General Electric or PGE, you're likely going to see a rate hike early next year. This is the largest rate increase in more than 20 years. The Oregon Public Utility Commissioners approved it this week to take effect in January. Residential customers will see the biggest increase, around 17%, while commercial customers can expect a nearly 16% rise. Industrial customers should see an 11% increase. PGE says the rate hike is to help cover costs and grid upgrades, stating that the company has made investments to keep its electric system safe, reliable, and secure in the midst of increasing costs for materials, supplies, and labor due to inflation. Unfortunately, customers could see yet another increase, this one related to wildfire mitigation costs, before the end of the year. That hike needs to be approved by state regulators. These increases will likely have a significant impact for low-income households that may already have a difficult time paying their energy bills. Benedict Springer, utility policy analyst with the nonprofit Community Action Partnership of Oregon, says there's research showing that people make trade-offs between spending money on food and health and spending money on utilities. Springer says it could lead to more households falling behind and not making payments or having their power turned off. PGE does offer discounts for low to moderate income households and an energy efficient incentive program.
There's good news and bad news regarding utilization of tobacco products among young people. Use by high school students declined in the past year, but rose among middle schoolers, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In both groups, e-cigarettes were the most popular, especially flavored products. Roz Brown has more.
Cigarettes may not appeal to America's youth like they did in the 1960s, but a significant number still experiment with e-cigarettes. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has new data that show the use of e-cigarettes by high school students declined in the past year, but rose among middle schoolers. CDC epidemiologist Jan Birdsey says from 2022 to 2023, e-cigarette use among high school students declined from roughly 14% to 10%. But the news about usage among younger students was not as encouraging.
We did find among middle school students significant increases in the current use of at least one tobacco product and the use of multiple tobacco products. We're still seeing e-cigarettes as the most commonly used product among both middle and high school students.
A 2020 survey by the Texas Department of State Health Services found about 11% of youth reported using e-cigarettes on at least one day over a 30-day period. It also showed about a third of respondents said they'd talked about the dangers of tobacco with a medical professional. To quit, Birdsey recommends the website teen.smokefree.gov or by calling 1-800-QUIT-NOW. E-cigarettes have been found to be less harmful than regular cigarettes because they contain fewer toxic chemicals, but they are not considered safe by the CDC because they're known to harm adolescent brain development. Birdsey says, not surprisingly, many who report using them are drawn to kid-friendly flavors.
About 9 out of 10 users of e-cigarettes were using a flavored product, such as fruit, candy, and other sweets, mint or menthol. So flavors increase the appeal of the products, encourage experimentation, and can contribute to that lifelong tobacco use.
The data show about half of students who have tried e-cigarettes reported still using them. A lack of information about the dangers of smoking cigarettes led an estimated 40% of Americans to take up the habit by the mid-1960s. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
In addition to the many other challenges they face, unhoused people are especially vulnerable to wildfire smoke. In California, one organization provides masks to people living outside, as well as information about health risks and guidance on where to seek shelter. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When dangerous wildfire smoke fills the air, public health agencies issue warnings to keep people safe.
The first thing we hear is for people to go inside, close their windows, and those are simply things that are not a possibility for people living on the streets.
Lucy Kasdan directs Alameda County Healthcare for the Homeless in California's Bay Area. She says unhoused people have a hard time escaping the smoke. And they're also more likely to suffer from health conditions, such as asthma and COPD, that increase the danger of breathing smoky air. And without easy access to internet and TV, they often lack up-to-date information about air quality conditions.
So the first thing that's important in terms of a response has to be information.
When wildfire smoke poses a risk, Kasdan's organization sends out teams to inform unhoused people about the health risks, distribute N95 masks, and provide information about indoor locations where they can take refuge. And as climate change brings more extreme fires and other disasters, she says it will be vital for cities to understand the particular dangers that unhoused people face and to plan for how to protect them. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Medal of Honor recipients are being saluted for their service this weekend in honor of Veterans Day. Lawmakers in Congress are considering a bill that would ensure the Medal of Honor monument is located near the Lincoln Memorial. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Medal of Honor recipients will be honored this weekend for Veterans Day. The Medal of Honor is the highest award in the nation for valor on the battlefield. On Sunday, a Salute to Service halftime show at the Dallas Cowboys football game against the New York Giants will honor 16 recipients, including Seattle native Lieutenant Colonel William Swenson.
I'll be out there on the field on that day. What we'll be representing, though, is the character of all Americans and the heroism that all Americans have access to through their everyday lives.
President Abraham Lincoln created the Medal of Honor 160 years ago. It's a highly selective award, with only about 3,500 people receiving it, of which 65 are alive today. The Medal of Honor Museum is being built in Arlington, Texas, and Congress has approved a monument for the award in Washington, D.C. New legislation in Congress this year would ensure the monument is located within 1,000 feet of the Lincoln Memorial. The museum has also announced its leadership institute, known as the Griffin Institute, in honor of King Griffin, who gave the museum $30 million. Head of the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation, Chris Cassidy, says the museum is meant to highlight the many ways people serve the country, including as first responders, police, nurses, and teachers.
The future of our nation depends upon people volunteering to serve in whatever capacity that is. So that's what we aim to do, is inspire people for service through programs in our institute and visitation of our museum and walking along the National Mall and seeing all the inspirational things that are already there.
Swenson says the museum's Leadership Institute will play a critical role.
Ultimately, it's the character that's the most important thing about the Medal of Honor. So the Griffin Institute will ensure that this character is projected out into a broader space, and we will change the lives of Americans with these stories.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 10th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and ideas at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Isabel Charlet and Josh Salem. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Alex Gonzalez, Roz Brown, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is the affable Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, corporate news media use at least a couple of largely unexplored